This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for professional medical advice. Please seek a medical professional or healthcare provider if you're seeking any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome back.
Today we're going to talk about something so cool.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Just the human psyche, you know?
Exactly.
The placebo effect.
Yes. We're going to talk about the placebo effect.
Yeah. Which Cuban mothers suffer from immensely.
Yeah. I think everyone suffers from the placebo. Even me. I feel like I do too.
Oh, but it's so pronounced on my mother.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like reading pronounced.
I know. I see it in all my moms that love the nebulizer machine.
That is the biggest one. Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Mario says that all the time. Yeah. All the time. Oh my God. That's so funny that you mentioned that. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So what is the placebo effect? The placebo effect occurs when a person experiences real improvement in their health after receiving a treatment that is inert, meaning it has no active ingredients, no therapeutic value. This could be like a sugar pill, this could be a saline injection, or even a sham surgery.
Which they exist. I didn't even know such thing existed.
It's crazy, but yeah, sometimes it does, yeah.
When I was reading into this, I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah.
That blew my mind.
And the saline injections are a real thing, too.
That one I knew. Yeah. But the sham surgeries blew my mind.
So what is the catch? The patient believes that they're going to receive an actual treatment, and this belief alone can trigger the real psychological changes. And actually, we do the placebo effect all the time. This is what we do even during research studies. Exactly. We give a person a placebo, right? Because we don't want anyone to know what they're taking. We want to see the real results.
And sometimes it's double blinded. Even like the researchers don't know which one
is. Yeah, exactly. Who has a placebo or who doesn't?
Exactly.
So for example, if someone takes a placebo painkiller believing it's real, their brain might release endorphins, naturally pain relieving chemicals, leading to actual pain relief. Studies using brain imaging have shown that placebos can activate the same brain regions as actual medications. So while treatment itself doesn't directly cause healing, the patient's expectations actually do give them some benefit. And it's just the power of the brain.
I know. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. I should put like a little jingle.
A little jingle.
For like history.
The history.
For every time.
History
like,
lesson.
Here we go. Like the more you know, like a PBS.
Miss Julie. So it's like a teacher. Miss Julie's gonna give us a history lesson.
Oh God, I could never be a teacher. Props to you teachers. You guys have the patience and the tolerance of saints. I could never. Like I see our friend Gabby, she's a kinder teacher. I'm like, how do you do this? And then you have two little kids at home too. So you leave little kids and then you go home. Two more little kids that are your spawns.
Oh, I can't imagine adolescent teachers either. High school teachers, oh my goodness. That is a whole other ballgame.
Well, you kind of do, but you don't have to teach. You just see them and bye. But like,
I teach. You know, I teach residents and students and stuff like that. And that's hard on its own. But there's something about school.
Exactly.
Teachers.
Saints.
That's a whole other, yeah.
Saints.
Whole other world. Yeah. One that I do not fit in.
No, me neither. Yeah. Me neither at all. All right. So a brief history on placebo effect. So the word placebo comes from Latin meaning I shall please. I don't know. Anyway, historically, doctors used placebos when they didn't have effective treatments available, but still wanted to offer patients something to make them feel better. And that is like, if you've heard any of our episodes with history, bloodletting, the humorous things, like all these things that people would do back then, most of it was placebo.
Yeah.
Bloodletting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
it really was.
Yeah. If anything, bloodletting
this
would.
This will work. Yes.
Let's just take out blood And yeah. then they're like, oh, yeah, I feel better. But yeah, all you do was bleed a lot for no reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in fact, in the 18th and 19th century, doctors often prescribed placebos as a way to calm patients who demanded treatment for illnesses that had no known cure. The placebo effect became scientifically recognized in the mid-20th century when clinical trials began using placebo groups to test new treatments. A pivotal moment came in 1955 with Henry K. Beecher's paper called The Powerful Placebo, which suggested that up to 35% of patients could experience symptom relief from placebos alone. Since then, placebos have been an essential part of clinical research.
Yep. So when is the placebo effect used? We kind of just mentioned it about the clinical trials. We use it as a control group to test whether new drugs or treatments are effective. So in these trials, one group will receive the actual treatment, okay, while the other group will receive a placebo. Neither of the participants, and sometimes nor the researchers, know who is getting which treatment. This is called a double-blind study when both parties don't know which one's which. So the setup helps ensure that any improvements seen in the treatment group are due to the drug itself and not just the patients believing that they're getting better.
Okay. And there's also, like, it helps against the biases as well from the tester.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. To not be like, oh, I'm seeing that drug is actually working.
Exactly.
So you eliminate that as well.
And then in some cases, doctors may use placebos in clinical practice, though this raises ethical questions. Yeah. For example, if a patient insists on receiving medications for a condition like a viral infection, which antibiotics won't treat, then some doctors might prescribe vitamins or other inert substances to satisfy their demand without causing harm. I'm guilty. I'm guilty. Because every time I tell a parent, I'm like, why don't you try Zarbee's? Yeah. But I actually tried Zarbee's.
I've been giving Zarbee's for the last 2 weeks.
And it works for me. And then I even tell myself, I'm like, this is a placebo effect. Yeah. Maybe, you know.
If you use a honey one, there are good properties in
it. No, yeah, I definitely. But I actually prefer for someone to just do pure raw honey.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Okay. But, you know, whatever, like, we can go on a whole entire tangent on this, all these medications that say that they're good and
the FDA is banning phenyl.
Yeah, phenylephrine. It's about time.
Yeah, there you go.
I hate that ingredient.
But there you go. That's a perfect example of what you're saying.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, I actually used to work at an urgent care where the physician, we had this one patient come in every single time. He obviously had some sort of mental illness that he just felt like he needed a shot for something, and it was saline.
There you go.
My doctor didn't charge him for the shot.
Yeah.
Because he's like, it's saline.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, you know, it's my patient for a really long time, and he feels that it works. And I was just like, is that right? Like, is that ethically correct? Which is the reason that this is poses like ethical questions. But the placebo effect can really do wonders for people.
It really can. And I mean, it could be my non-doctor opinion. If it's a last resort that this patient cannot, like, there's no reasoning, then what's really the harm behind a saline shot?
I mean, but then you, like, it's like you're giving an injection that someone doesn't need instead of being honest. Like, I can see both sides of the picture. I think it's kind of like at the end of the day, just very dependent on the patient and the provider.
Case per case.
Yeah. And what you feel comfortable morally, because, like, what's ethics? That's all, like, perspective, right? 100%. Like, where are your morals as a person?
Yeah.
So... Yeah, that's a complication.
It is.
All right. So, Jules, talk about the psychology behind the placebo effect.
Well, there we go. All right. Expectation and belief, right? So at the heart of the placebo effect is the power of expectation, all right? When patients believe that they are receiving a treatment that will help them, their brain can generate real psychological responses. It's mind-blowing what the brain is capable of doing. This expectation can trigger the release of neurotransmitters like dopamine and endorphins, which are associated with pleasure and pain relief, respectively. then you have positive expectations, right? If a patient expects to feel better after taking a treatment, their brain may initiate processes that align with that belief. For example, studies have shown that placebos can activate the brain's reward pathways, similar to how actual medications work. The placebo effect is also influenced by classical conditioning, where patients associate certain treatments like pills or injections, as she was mentioning in that example, with feeling better based on past experiences. Over time, the mere act of receiving a treatment, even if it's just a placebo, can trigger a conditioned response in the body, okay? And what's crazy about this is that the brain is actually doing something physical, you know, to change that. It's not just like a belief. It's a physical, like, alteration that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, sending those neurotransmitters and whatnot.
Yeah. So then the second is the role of attention. The placebo effect also works through attention and focus. When people are taking a placebo, they often pay closer attention to their body and notice subtle improvements like they might otherwise, you know, overlook.
Yeah.
So this heightened attention can amplify positive sensations or diminish negative ones. In other words, by focusing on feeling better, patients may actually start feeling better. So additionally, when patients expect relief from symptoms like pain or anxiety, they're more likely to notice any small reductions in discomfort and attribute to those changes to treatments, even if it's just a sugar pill.
Yep. Yep.
And I actually do believe this because sometimes I think about, okay, if a person, I don't know, you're in a car accident and you break a bone, you are so shocked.
Oh, yeah.
By the car accident that you're not feeling pain.
Yeah.
You don't feel pain until after.
A lot of people report that,
yeah.
That they didn't even notice it. Yeah.
These are these endorphins, right? Or people say the adrenaline and all these things. So there is something to this that your brain really has a lot of control in all of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then you have the brain's reward system. So the brain's reward system plays a significant role in the placebo effect. When patients believe they're receiving an effective treatment, their brain releases dopamine, a neurotransmitter associated with pleasure and reward. This is particularly evident in conditions like Parkinson's disease, where placebos have been shown to increase dopamine levels in the brain, temporarily improving motor function. So the condition between expectation and reward is crucial for understanding how placebos can produce real changes in both subjective experiences like pain relief and objective measures like motor control.
Yeah.
Pretty astonishing.
You can also have social and environmental cues. Placebo effect doesn't happen in isolation. It is heavily influenced by social context in which treatment occurs. Factors such as the doctor's demeanor, the setting of the treatment, and even how confident or empathetic a physician appears can also enhance the placebo response. So let's say I come in and I'm like, oh my God, you need to take this because this is going to work, okay? And they give it to you and you're like, oh my God, it worked. Look at that. Like, no one would ever have a placebo effect if I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work.
Yeah, let's try this.
You can try it.
I've had a lot of bad experiences on it.
No. Research shows that it doesn't make a difference.
Exactly.
So they're going to be like, all right, well, I guess that's not going to do shit.
It's so true. So true.
Doctor-patient relationships is a big one. Research has shown that the doctors conveying confidence and warmth, which is literally what we just talked about right now, suggests that the trust in healthcare providers plays a crucial role in shaping expectations and outcomes. And I think that's really obvious because I feel like there's a lot of skepticism ever since social media.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot me if you want to shoot me.
And worse after COVID.
Yeah, after COVID, there has been such speculation with medicine. To me, it's almost sad.
It is.
That there are people that don't trust their doctors.
Yeah.
And just totally discredit all that time that they put in studying and residency and training and everything.
Yeah.
And that they go and they're kind of like just suspect. Why? Because you saw a TikTok video? Or why? Because you saw someone on Instagram or a blog about something?
Or because ChatGPT told you otherwise.
Exactly. And it's like you're like so skeptical about something. So obviously, if you already go in being skeptical, then you might receive some medical recommendation or information, and you're going to be like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But it's because you probably already set yourself up for that mentality. So it's the same thing, but reverse, right?
100%.
You also have rituals of the treatment. So the act of taking the medication or undergoing a procedure where it's real or fake can really trigger psychological responses simply because people associate these rituals with healing. The more elaborate or formalized procedure, surgery versus taking a pill, the stronger the placebo effects tends to be. I think a really good example of this is like that episode that we had on orthorexia.
Yes.
How they have to prepare things in a very specific way. It's a very ritual thing. That already makes them feel better.
Yep. Yep. I hadn't put those two together, but you're absolutely right. It's, I don't know. This is all like so interesting to me. The next one is the nocebo effect. Interestingly, just as positive expectations can lead to improvements, which is the placebo effect, negative expectations can cause harm. This is known as the nocebo effect. For example, if patients believe that they will experience side effects from a treatment, even if it's just a placebo, they may develop those symptoms purely due to their expectations.
Okay.
I've seen this way too many times.
Yeah.
It's so true. It's like, and then they take another form of the same medication. It's like, nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that makes no sense.
Anyway. A study involving patients with allergies found that when participants were told that they might experience itching after applying a cream, which was actually an inert, so meaning nothing, like it's just a blank cream with no active like medication in it, many reported itching, even though there was no active ingredient involved. This highlights how powerful negative expectations can be in shaping physical experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also have the mind-body connection, which I'm a huge believer in.
Same.
Okay, so the placebo effect underscores the deep connection between the mind and body, okay? The psychological state, like hope, optimism, trust, can translate into real biological changes through mechanisms such as endorphin release. Placebos have been shown to stimulate release of endorphins, like we've been talking about. Immune response modulation. Some studies suggest that placebos might even influence your immune function by altering stress responses and reducing that inflammation, which we've talked about cortisol levels being elevated in stress and all of that. That can absolutely, like if you have a better attitude about things, less stress, of course it's going to be better for your immune system.
Absolutely.
This mind-body connection is why placebos can be effective in treating conditions where psychological factors play a significant role, such as chronic pain, anxiety disorders, depression, irritable bowel syndrome. It's all related and tied into each other.
Yeah, yeah. And next type, you have open-label placebos. One of the more intriguing developments in recent research is the idea of open-label placebos, where patients are fully aware that they are taking an inactive substance, but still experience benefits.
That's crazy.
Thanks. Studies have shown that even when patients know that they're receiving a placebo, they can still report improvement in symptoms like pain or fatigue. This suggests that engaging with healthcare rituals, whether through medication or other forms of care, can have therapeutic effects even without deception.
Yeah.
So, you know, how I see this is, like your self-care ritual, like let's say you're always like every Sunday you put on this mask, this facial mask.
Yeah.
And then you feel that like when you do it, you're so much more relaxed. Your Monday is a little better and stuff like that. I kind of relate that to this. It's just a face mask.
Yeah.
It's not going to improve your mood in like a medication sense.
Yeah.
But yet the day that you don't, your Monday sucks.
Yeah.
You wake up tired. You feel like shit. And that's how kind of like I could see that as an example, right?
Yeah.
It's like you know it.
Your ritual.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like you know. It's like this is probably doing nothing for me, but I need to do it anyways.
Yeah. You're just used to doing it and it just feels right.
And it works. It works. In your brain, it works. It might not work and you know that, but it works.
Exactly. Let me just live.
I choose to believe otherwise.
Just let me live.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So a little bit of risk and benefits. I'm going to start off with the benefits. The main benefit is symptom relief, right? Placebos have been shown to alleviate symptoms like pain, fatigue, depression, anxiety. For example, conditions like irritable bowel syndrome or chronic pain disorders where psychological factors play a really big role, placebos can often be surprisingly effective. Fewer side effects. Since placebos are inert, right? They don't cause harmful side effects like other drugs might, okay? And then cost effectiveness. In some cases, using placebos could reduce healthcare costs by avoiding expensive medications and interventions.
Yeah, we all know that like medication costs these days
is awful. Is unfair, to be honest. Risks, there are ethical concerns, okay, like we had already mentioned, giving patients placebos without their knowledge raises significant ethical issues. Is it right to deceive patients if it might help them feel better? Right. I personally, I don't think it's right. You need to make your own decisions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and you're going to a doctor for help.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But then they could argue it, yeah, I am helping them in a psychological sense, but I'm, I don't know. You could attack that in so many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You but see what still, I mean? I just don't think it's ethical.
Yeah, no, I am with you. I am totally with you.
Don't get me wrong. I think ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And okay, yes, like you're my patient and you're like, doc, don't tell me. I'm going to tell you. No, I need to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need to tell you because you need to be in charge of
your autonomy.
Your autonomy. Yeah. That is literally the definition of autonomy.
Yeah.
Decisions on your own body. So I'm not going to give you something.
But then they could say, well, you are like you are by coming to me.
Yeah. The only time that I'm ever okay with giving a placebo is if you know that you may get a placebo.
Right. Like the open label.
Like exactly. Or not even like if you come to me, doc, I want to treat this, but I want you to either give me this or a placebo. Don't tell me what you give me.
Okay.
Okay. So you are openly telling me that you're okay with either or.
Okay.
Okay. So I am letting you make that decision.
Understood.
That's technically autonomy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because you're okay with either one.
Yeah.
Going into a research study.
Exactly.
So there's people that go into research studies and they need to sign off saying that you may be in the group that actually doesn't get treatment.
Yeah, it is technically autonomy. And like, yeah, in the research studies.
Yeah, have you ever seen did you ever watch Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that episode where Meredith really wants, I forgot who it was. I think it was her boss.
Okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
To get the Alzheimer's treatment.
Yes, yes.
And she goes and like switches up the research results or whatever.
Yep.
So it's like, for me, it's like if you are going into a study, right? Obviously, you're going to a research study. You want that new medication that could be groundbreaking. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, but you don't know if you're going to get it because you might get a placebo.
You're right.
So I think that is not ethically wrong because you know that there's a chance that you might be getting a placebo and you're okay with it.
Yeah, yeah. You knew that going into it.
But just giving it to you without you knowing.
Yeah.
No, I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay. You know, everything should be like open book.
Yeah, right? Yeah, transparent.
Transparent, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, delay in effective treatment. So relying on placebos could delay appropriate medical interventions or serious conditions. Again, you know, if like you're just giving the placebo and not really addressing the concern, then what are you, you know, like
you're
risking it, right? Mm-hmm. Then the nocebo effect, so just as positive expectations can lead to improvement, negative expectations can also cause harm. For instance, if someone believes they will experience side effects from a treatment, even if it was just a sugar pill, they might actually develop those symptoms.
Yeah, yeah. So some interesting tidbits on this, placebo surgery. I found this incredibly fascinating because I didn't know it existed. One of the most mind-boggling examples of the placebo effect comes from studies on surgery. Placebo surgeries, they actually exist. And they are particularly striking examples of the placebo effect, or patients undergo a sham, or aka a fake surgery, meaning no actual therapeutic intervention is performed. Despite this, many patients still report significant improvements in their symptoms. These surgeries are typically used in clinical trials to determine whether the benefits of a surgical procedure are due to the procedure itself, or simply the patient's belief in the effectiveness. Here are some notable examples of this type of the placebo surgeries. First one, knee surgery for osteoarthritis. We just did arthritis in our last Patreon episode, so check that out. One of the most famous examples of placebo surgery comes from a study on knee osteoarthritis conducted by Dr. Bruce Moseley in 2002. In this randomized controlled trial, patients with osteoarthritis were divided into three groups. One group received actual
arthroscopic
surgery to remove damaged cartilage. Another group underwent a less invasive procedure where only the joint was flushed. And the third group received a sham surgery where incisions were made, but no actual surgical work was done. Amazingly, after 2 years, patients in all three groups reported similar levels of pain relief and improvement in function. What?
Yep. It's a real thing.
This study suggested that much of the benefit from knee arthroscopy for osteoarthritis might be due to the placebo effect rather than the surgery itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about knees. Like, not even, like, pain, like a psychological thing. It's like knee surgery.
Yep.
Next one, Parkinson's disease. I briefly mentioned it. Placebo surgeries have also been explored in patients with Parkinson's disease, which is a condition characterized by motor symptoms like tremors and stiffness due to the loss of dopamine-producing neurons in the brain. In one study, researchers tested a surgical procedure involving the transplantation of fetal tissue into the brains of Parkinson's patients. Some patients received the actual transplant while others underwent a sham surgery, where holes were drilled into the skulls, but no tissue was transplanted. The results showed that both groups experienced improvements in their motor symptoms, suggesting that part of the benefit from this invasive brain surgery was due to the placebo effect. This led researchers to question whether certain surgical interventions for Parkinson's were truly effective or if the patient's expectation just played a significant role. Like, that makes me, like, question so many surgeries then, right? We're talking about knees and we're talking about something like Parkinson's.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder about so many surgical interventions,
they're
right?
They're just parts of our brain that we haven't really yet developed, you know, that maybe needs more development. Have you ever heard of, oh man, that's another episode we can do, biofeedback?
No, I haven't. What is that?
So biofeedback is a type of mind, but I'm just reading the definition, okay? Because right. Sometimes I have trouble explaining what it is, but we do use it a lot. And I think it's like kind of like training the brain and almost using these principles, right?
Okay.
So biofeedback is a type of mind-body technique you use to control some of your body's functions, such as your heart rate, breathing patterns, muscle responses.
Oh.
So during biofeedback, you're connected to electrical pads, right?
Uh-huh.
So you're and then it helps you get information of your body. So if you're feeling pain,
right,
connecting in, they are showing you like what you are experiencing.
Oh.
It's kind of like training yourself. So it's almost like seeing it.
Yeah.
Right? Seeing it helps you understand it.
Absolutely.
Almost. It's actually very interesting. And I think it's like using that part of our brains to like really help with certain things. So a lot of patients with chronic pain, fatigue,
yeah,
all these things that you can't see physically,
yeah,
the biofeedback helps their bodies like almost see things and helps the therapy so they can see things improving.
Huh. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's very interesting.
You know, kind of, it's not that, I know that, but like kind of something that's, I guess, in some way, somehow tied into this. When I was giving birth, I was like not effectively pushing at mm-hmm. first, right? And then my OB, she was like, do you want to see it?
Yes.
And then I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, I could bring a mirror in so you could see what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, bring it in. I don't care. I'm not squeamish.
Mm-hmm.
So she brought it in. 2 minutes later, I gave birth.
Yeah.
Like, I was actively able to see
yeah.
what I was doing, like how I was pushing, how
yeah.
I was working, and what was working.
Yeah.
You know, and what
yeah.
wasn't.
Yeah.
And that immediately, like it was night and day from how I was working before to
there's
night
something
after.
About seeing visual stimulation
exactly
that can help with that
yeah yeah it's like reinforcement in
yeah.
some way yeah
mm-hmm.
so cool yeah. cool.
Another thing, vertebroplasty for spinal fractures, as Julie was talking about all these sham surgeries.
Yeah.
So vertebroplasty is a minimally invasive procedure used to treat spinal fractures by injecting bone cement into the fracture of the vertebra. And then for years, it was believed to provide significant pain relief for patients with osteoporosis-related fractures. However, two randomized controlled trials published in 2009 compared vertebroplasty to sham procedures where needles were inserted but no cement was injected. These studies found no significant difference between real sham procedures in terms of pain relief or functional improvement. So these findings raised doubts of whether vertebroplasty was truly effective or not. But I mean, again, like, everyone can have different.
Like, it's in the severity of it, I think.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, for me, it's like, I don't care if it's placebo or if it's not. Like,
yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
Also, the angioplasty for stable coronary artery disease. I think this is crazy.
Yeah.
So in cardiology, angioplasty is often used to open blocked arteries for patients with stable coronary artery disease to relieve chest pain, also called angina, whatever you want to call it.
Angina.
Yes. I call it angina. However, a 2017 study known as the Orbita trial compared real angioplasty with a sham procedure where catheters were inserted but no stents were placed. Surprisingly, there was little difference between the two groups in the terms of symptom release after 6 weeks. Don't even get me started on that one at all. That one, I literally have no words.
Right? Yeah. I had to include it because I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know how many angioplasties are done daily?
Yeah, seriously.
That's why it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, and just the procedure itself, like, wow.
It's heart surgery.
Yeah. So the findings suggest that some benefits attributed by angioplasty might be due to the placebo effect rather than actual mechanical opening of the arteries. But there are people that have almost 100% block.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's...
And they don't have angina or angina.
Yeah.
So it's like... but everyone is different.
Yeah. I don't know. This really blew my mind. This
literally any single time that I don't have an explanation for something, I just tell myself, humans. Humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Humans.
The brain. For me, it's like
humans.
The brain. Like, wow.
We're not straightforward.
No.
We're very complicated.
Very.
You think you understand a human and you don't.
Negative. Not even a little bit.
Nope.
Mm-mm. As much as we know of the human body, we still don't know a lot about it.
Exactly.
Like, a lot. We keep touching a little bit on this topic, so let's dive into it a little bit. We're going to talk about the ethical considerations about it, right? So while placebo surgeries, we're still on the surgical part of it, provide valuable insights into whether certain procedures are genuinely effective, they also raise significant ethical concerns, right? So as she had mentioned before in a different sense, deception. Patients undergoing sham surgeries must be unaware that they are not receiving an actual intervention, which involves deceiving them, a practice that can undermine trust between doctors and patients.
Yeah.
Risks without benefits. Even though no therapeutic intervention is performed during placebo surgeries, they can still carry risks associated with anesthesia and surgical incisions without offering any direct medical benefit. Because honestly, there's always going to be a risk with any surgery.
Yeah.
Always. Because these are ethical concerns, placebo surgeries are typically reserved for research settings where informed consent, as she had clearly just mentioned before, informed consent is carefully managed and patients are fully aware that they may receive a sham procedure as part of the trial that they signed up for.
But then I can say, but then does that really affect the placebo effect?
Yeah, you're right.
Because you only have maybe an expectation, it's like, maybe I didn't get anything.
Exactly. And then that's a bias that you created.
Exactly. What can I tell you? There's no safe answer. Humans.
And lastly, the last interesting tidbit for this episode is the placebo effect in sports. Okay. So athletes have also been shown to perform better when they believe that they've taken performance-enhancing drugs, even when those drugs were actually placebos. This suggests that mental state plays a significant role in physical performance.
Yes. The brain.
Brain.
Conclusion. I believe in the placebo effect.
100%.
Yeah. I think the placebo effect is just putting a name to that part of our brain that we're using that helps us.
And we don't understand
how it works. And we don't understand how it works, exactly.
Or better yet, we don't understand how to control it.
Or we just don't know about it. Yeah, just don't know much about
because
it.
Because we could use it clearly, you know, in like pain and all these things, but we don't know how to control it unless we're like, doing like a stimulus, like providing an input, if that makes sense. If I'm trying to explain,
it's all
that.
About training your brain,
It's just, I don't know, obviously, it does have a lot of potential benefits, especially in the field of research. I mean, it's like pretty much the gold standard, in research,
the way that makes most sense,
absolutely. But just like
you got something or you don't get something,
just the way that even in a surgical sense it works, anyway. Yeah, so That was today's episode. I hope you liked it as much as, honestly, I did.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. And if you guys have any other suggestions for episodes, let us know. Follow us on all forms of social media. Please take a look at our Patreon, patreon.com/funnymedicinepodcast, where we have over 60 full episodes just like this. Just like this. But over 60 of them there. So
check us out.
Check us out. There's two tiers, an audio-only version or a video also version, depending on whatever you want. And you also get the video version of all of these weekly episodes a week in advance.
And also check out our holiday gear.
Yes, check out our merch. It's going to be listed wherever you're listening or watching this at. Go to the description. It's there. We love it. I love it. I love the design of it. And so yeah, give that a look as well. And thank you for tuning in. And we will see you on the next one.
Bye.
Like, comment, review us on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc.
Check us out on Instagram and TikTok at Funny Medicine Podcast. Our Gmail is funnymedicine305@gmail.com. And remember, we are not diagnosing you.
Definitely not. Just funny stuff.
See you later, guys.